Hello and welcome to the Mobility Podcast. We are once again at the Transportation Research Board Annual Meeting 2024. My name is Greg Rogers, founder and president of Ares Public Policy, and I'm joined by my very handsome co-hosts.
It's okay.
You could call me fan.
It's January. No one's feeling it right now.
The most handsome of all of this group now.
Fair.
Tough, but fair. I'll take it.
So we got Greg Rodriguez here. We got Pete Gold here, but we also have a new guest co-host here with us, Sam Rojas. Sam, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thank you. It's really exciting.
Yeah. So let's help the audience get to know you, Sam. So let's start with the number one question.
Oh man.
What is your transportation story?
Oh, man.
Do we want to start with, hi, Sam, who are you?
Yeah.
And then we can get...
Well, also, views are our own, aren't they?
They're always our own.
Our lawyers are slipping.
Views.
Now you have to make me give the disclaimer that I'm not currently practicing law. Thanks again.
Yeah.
Just a reminder.
Definitely a disclaimer because we are at TRB 2024. Sam, back to you.
Sam Rojas. Mm-hmm. Really excited to be here. Just like the 2 seconds behind me is that I'm a former public servant turned tech advisor, public affairs expert. My transportation story just feels like it's never ending. Like, I think like all of us, we have an evolving transportation story, but where it kind of all started is my grandma. She is my transportation story. She immigrated to the United States from the Philippines back in the 60s, with very little English, very little education, but super street smart. She's sassy as a whip. She's a firecracker. And so it comes to no surprise, probably, that I was mostly raised by her. But for medical reasons, she couldn't drive. But she had 2 feet. I had 2 feet and a hustle. And we walked everywhere. And I mean, everywhere, like errands, grocery store, whatever. But this was in the suburbs, you know, so nobody else was walking. But because we were the only folks that were walking, everyone knew us. So everyone knew my grandma. If something happened, they would call us, you know, they would let us know that something was going down. And so that was kind of my experience. I mean, if we went somewhere far as a kid, far was like going to Costco or something. Mm-hmm. We took the local transit. And if we got really lucky, we hitched a ride with one of her friends from the community. And when my grandfather got better, who also for medical reasons couldn't drive for a while, we started driving after that. But my early experiences were that walking is independence, walking is freedom, walking is community, really, and that driving is a privilege. And so that's kind of how I've always come to experience or understand transportation. And now, you know, cut to kind of like the professional side of it. I was walking into my first public policy job in City Hall in San Francisco, this big time 3 degrees from Harvard dude who was the president of the Board of Supervisors at the time, David Chu. Yeah, I was nervous and I didn't know what to expect. And he came in with this like suit, as you know, expect, suit and tie, but he had a helmet on his head and he was rolling in with his bike and sweating and like this giant smile. And he just was like, sup, dude. And the rest is history. Him and I worked on a lot of legislation, some of it being transportation, a lot of it being sort of around built environment, housing, economic development stuff. And I spent over a decade in public service working on that kind of stuff. And so, it really turned me on to this ever-growing, ever-evolving movement. And it continues today. I'm the director of public affairs for a company called Replica. We do mobility data, holistic mobility data around not just where people are moving, but why and who they are and their sociodemographics, so that we can really understand what the needs are on the ground. And so, getting to work with governments across the U.S. has been pretty amazing. And that's kind of my story. And that's why I'm excited to be here. I think all of our stories really make up the culture around this and we make up how policy gets shaped. And so thanks for letting me share it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's great to have someone who has experience at the local level as well. I mean, of course, Greg, you've also worked with local governments too. And we've been a pretty federally focused podcast for quite a while, though, to a large degree. And I also have to say that I respect the hell out of someone who, number one, bikes in San Francisco with all of the hills, yeah. and number two, does it in a suit. And number three is public servant, so actually gets out onto the roads on a bike and gets to understand what the impacts of decisions they make actually are.
Yeah, no, it's nice to break the DC bubble. So welcome, Sam. And just
thanks.
Having lived in the Bay Area, like there's no better way to commute but the ferry.
That is the most elite way by far.
Coming from Rick County.
You're only coming from one place.
Oakland.
That's true, but so nobody takes you. That's true.
Oakland back.
That's true.
Actually,
Jack London Square. Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's a nice end to the day.
Yeah. Too bad the streetcar was never too helpful for me when I was in the Bay, but
no.
I did enjoy riding it at least.
Yeah.
But even your work at Replica, not that we're going to be talking about that a lot on the podcast, definitely include elements of it, but you use the term holistic.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what we're all working towards is how do we actually achieve the term multimodal?
Right.
And what are the tools to help us get there and implement? So
right.
Look forward to learning from you.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I think that's a good lead into, we're here at TRB annual meeting, and this is where a lot of the transportation nerds come together.
Transportation show on earth.
The greatest transportation show on earth. It is the most important three-letter conference in January, ignoring whatever's happening in Las Vegas.
Wow.
Yeah, shots fired year after year.
Yeah.
I'm going to keep on doing it.
Take that, SAE. Yeah. Literally all of them in January are three-letter.
Right.
Oh, boy, we're going to get a letter from SAE. So this year... So I'd be curious, what are you guys watching this year? As we head in the new year, we've seen a historic investment in America's infrastructure and moving towards clean energy. And it seems like we're at this massive historic moment. We're also trying to figure out a lot of different challenges right now. And at TRB is where a lot of folks come together to discuss what those issues are, what their research they're doing is, and how we're seeing this executed on the ground. What are the things that each of you are watching as you're going around the conference this year?
Yeah, I mean, I think you raise a really good point about this being kind of a different time in kind of the whole the broader transportation world. For a while, as I've come to TRBs over the years, it was always so much of it was here are these persistent challenges, things like safety, things like sustainability, access and equity, all of those. Within this status quo and kind of a program and funding levels that, would go up, but we're kind of trying to, it felt like nibbling around. And so the research community was very focused on here's what needs to be done and here's what we should do. What's so different right now, I think, and is an interesting moment is, with the IIJA and the IRA, the two, the bipartisan infrastructure law and the Inflation Reduction Act, they went huge so when it's no longer we should really invest in safe streets for all. It's we did.
Yeah.
There's a ton of money.
Right.
Let's get the projects going. And so it's become, and I don't mean this in a derogatory sense, it's become less of an academic exercise and more we are in a implementation project, and deployment side. And so that's where it's kind of been interesting to see a little bit of the kind of academic and the research community trying to find its role in this phase. Where they, there's a lot of, it's almost less here's what the next project is, as much as here is work that's been done to help inform now that we're really doing this. And then there's kind of a next little pause between all these programs being, legislated, stood up, and now they're making awards. And there's a little bit of a pause between that point and this is now an operational, the road has been redesigned. And so at which point then we can start collecting data and start really doing good analysis. So I've gotten a sense, a little bit of that sense of kind of what's what should we be doing right now to help advance on some of these key issues, because we put so much money towards, you know, to kind of where, you know, put our money where our mouth's been on, what do we need to do? And yeah. So it's now they're like, let's do it.
Yeah. And it feels like like you're saying, we're at almost this interstitial moment where some of the money has been put out. There's still more rounds to come. It's hard to say what the impact of any of these programs really is yet.
Yeah, technically nothing. Obligating funds doesn't, make a road safer, but it will.
Yeah, and you have to wonder. No one is going to read every single paper that's released, obviously. But
speak for yourself.
Right? Yeah, well, I voracious research reader, if you call. But it's kind of about the mass amount of conversations that we have year after year after year that are informing what's happening across the board, right?
I guess the only thing I'll say, maybe it pushes back a little bit, is I do agree that IIJA was transformational and put in investment that we needed. But at the end of the day, it's still a surface transportation bill. And I think that's been a little lost over the last few years. And I think I'm really excited for all this funding. I still kind of see this as kind of pilot funding, and my biggest fear is we don't know how to actually implement and move the needle to embrace the transformational moment that the IIJA is trying to create. And I think that's a theme, at least we've been talking about, and I see it at TRB, is how do you merge, Sam and I were talking about this, how do you merge the research with the implementation?
Right.
And perhaps there's never a more important moment than ever that we need to do this. And how do we set up, like, well, I was joking, my word for 24 is going to be technical assistance. Mm-hmm. It's great. You see like programs like Thriving Communities, very much needed, but I almost feel like, of course, you can always wish for things. Hindsight's 2020. I wish some of that had been done over the last 5 years before we got IIJA, but
yeah,
I'm glad we got IIJA. So don't get me wrong, but I'm just trying to figure out how do we make sure that we seize this moment, and then the next surface transportation bill continues to build on.
Yeah, no, I actually think that's a really great point, because we're seeing this on a lot of these, especially the new programs, where it kind of hit out the gate and folks who have been focused on that new program and was pushing for that, we're like, all right, let's go. And the state DOT was like, yeah, I'm still reading the summary of the bill
I still have 1,100
pages to read. Yeah. And on both bills, up until the point they passed, could have easily died. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, yeah, sorry, I didn't have a 5-year plan and resources and staff and all that. So I think that's another, and I think it's getting a lot better. You know, we're now 2 years in from IIJA. And so folks are kind of wrapping their heads around this, really kind of thinking through this. You know, I think what I get a little nervous on some of the IRA money, because they were large pots of money, and there's an obvious incentive for the administration to get that money out right now.
Why is that? We won't go down there. There's another
because of the urgency of action. Because of the urgency of action. And so as a result, we don't get that couple year TA and thinking through it. And then once we are, you know, we'll have lessons learned, but then no money after it. So, but I do think we're hopefully going to be seeing a bunch of transformational stuff. And then the key to, I think, to your point, this still being a surface bill, is this needs to really ramp up and prove out some stuff that at some point needs to not necessarily be its own program, because there is money to do transportation stuff, and so it shouldn't be like here's your giant pots of money to do your projects, and also here's these grant programs to do really good stuff.
Yeah, like, especially because grant programs take time to apply for, right. And so many communities don't have the resources to do that.
Yeah.
And that was one thing that DOT had to respond to. They created all these programs to help rural communities apply. And some of the forms for some of these applications were pretty short, but some were actually very, very intensive and very difficult to do. And then plus there were phased approaches on grants like Safe Streets, Roads for All. You have to do a planning grant, you can get implementation. Smart grants for technology, you have to do a stage 1 planning grant before you can even get access to deploy technology. And so I think we're going to learn a lot from this. And my hope is that we ensure that the funds are being used as effectively as possible, but also rolling these out to make a big difference, because we have so many massive challenges to face. But at the same time, I think the biggest challenge we're facing is we're going to come back up on the next surface transportation reauthorization in no time. Mm-hmm. And we're going to have to figure out what worked and what didn't really fast. And it could end up getting political. And that's why I think that we need to make sure that we are taking the learnings that we have and show and implementing them as soon as possible.
Yeah. My biggest fear is like if we don't build out the coordinated, perfectly implemented EV charging network, then all of a sudden it's a failure. And that's the wrong way to approach it. Like this is a process. We may not have the right approach in place to be able to absorb and implement these emerging technologies or actually being deployed. And I don't know, while we were talking, I was thinking about like learning to ride a bike. Like, mm-hmm. You know, you have training wheels on it for a reason. Yeah. So you don't fall over right away.
Yeah.
And then even when you take the training wheels off, you fall down a few times, but then eventually you ride.
I kept mine on. I still have them on.
Yeah.
I've actually seen those.
A lot of us still have them on.
I mean, there's different reasons for that. But anyways, I think that's just a very interesting vibe that I'm getting at TRV. There's excitement. It seems more packed than it has been over the last few years.
That could be COVID, but there's excitement.
There's energy, but it's kind of how do we harness the energy to the right place?
Yeah. Yeah. How is the right thing? I think, I think the research community traditionally has spent so much time talking about the what, like what is it that we ought to be doing and why, like what have we seen both in the research and on the ground and what is that showing us? And we have citations and on citations to prove it. And now we're like getting at the how. And I think in some of these workshops and these lectures, I've been seeing, at least in the Q&A portion, like reminding, the people who are the decision makers and doing the implementation, like this is what the research has shown as a reminder. This is, what considerations should be, at the forefront for equity, mm-hmm. as an example, or for Vision Zero. This is what the research has shown. Yeah. And I think it's good to look back at that in the implementation phase as a reminder, because people do need that reminder. But I also think that the research community definitely has a role to play in the how, right? Like to your point around technical assistance, I think it's like not just, yes, we need folks to like understand these tools and all of this data now so that we can start to implement it right. But I also think there's a lot of room to parse out what all of these tools really mean and what they can do, so that when the time comes for reporting, we actually know how to use them, right? Like as a community, and there isn't a better community than, a bunch of nerds working on data tools.
And just
now,
to point out, we use that term as a term
lovingly,
of endearment.
Yes, lovingly, as a compliment. Lovingly.
Yeah.
Wholeheartedly embrace it. And I think the other thing I think we can't dismiss about TRV, going back to the energy and excitement, is I don't know of any other conference that gets so many people across different disciplines in one place at one time. And maybe our challenge is to figure out what are new ways to get engagement and collaboration and information sharing so that we do get those best practices that are developed and shared in a cost-effective way that helps every community come along.
Yeah.
Craig, what are you looking for? Craig Rogers.
So yesterday, Sunday of TRV, I spoke at a workshop about AI and transportation. And I think that's the big topic that everyone's trying to wrap their heads around, because, following Lisa ChatGPT in fall of 2022, I think everyone was still just trying to catch up at TRV last year with how quickly large language models and all these new technologies are going to even impact the field. And those conversations were just starting. Mm-hmm. And this year, there are a lot of sessions that are focused on AI. Whether it's about assessing the quality of infrastructure, whether it's using AI to plan, whether it's autonomous vehicles, of course.
Writing all of your applications for the discretionary grants.
Yeah, writing your applications for discretionary grants. And what I came into, and so when I, I've been working at sort of this intersection of transportation and tech and policy for a long time. And when I started to write this presentation at first, I was doing a survey of the practice, and I realized, well, number one, no one really understands what all of these different elements are. Number two, this is all evolving so quickly, and more important than understanding each of these technologies individually is having a way to quickly categorize and characterize these solutions and understand how they work in the real world. And so that's one of the things that I spoke on is how to create sort of those mental models to, because what's more important than knowledge about the technologies that we're going to see in AI applications, whether it's things that Replica's building, whether it's what Waymo's building, whether it's autonomous drones doing medical supply deliveries, is knowing how we interact with them.
Mm-hmm.
And so I gave maybe a quirky presentation that tied it all in with tarot cards, which was not a presentation on magic. I think there might have been some folks who thought I was practicing witchcraft.
Magician.
But, you know, the idea is that...
You shall not pass.
I weaved in Gandalf and Weird Barbie, and, you know, I'm not going to spend too much time talking about this more, but I think it is important that we try not to think about AI as a monolith. And there are a lot of people who are walking around TRB thinking about AI. It's going to be either going to be tremendously good or tremendously evil, and missing the fact that there are very, very many different applications of AI.
When we say AI in transportation, it feels like back when it was like big data or the Internet of Things. It was like, man, whatever. It meant things that are technology.
Yeah.
Oh, how much of a lot of what we're talking there is, you know, what 2 years ago and beyond, we were talking, that's automation and automated vehicles. And now it's AI. Like, is this, how much of this do we think is a new buzzword?
Is it just smart city? Basically
smart cities
all over again. Right.
Yeah.
I think in a lot of ways, this is smart cities coming closer to being manifested in the real world. But we're seeing
it's faster.
Yes. Right? And the way that I think about AI and just defining it is there an automated process for creating inferences and helping to inform decisions or actuating, you know, vehicles and helping to drive them? That's a great example. But AI is just such an amorphous term. And I've read a ton of papers in the past year where people try to characterize what AI is in transportation. And it always comes down to, well, we're not really sure, but there's a lot of different ways we can look at it. And so I think that to some, it's an eye of the beholder.
And I mean, during your same presentation, the USDOT, the Joint Office, ITS Joint Office, gave a good presentation about all the research that they've been doing and even went through the White House executive order. So, mm-hmm. I mean, it's what it means, we don't know, but at least they're, unlike smart cities, at least we're starting to define what artificial intelligence is at the federal level.
They had a smart city White House report too.
was it executive order and like definition?
No.
Actual statutes? No. Like this is, I don't know.
I
think this is something bigger.
Yeah.
But I agree with like the relevance of the question.
Yeah.
And the danger of over-relying it as a savior.
Well, and I think also trying to answer that question as an either or. Is this going to be dangerous or is this going to be amazing? And it's like the answer is yes.
Yeah.
It's like the internet. Is the internet amazing or is it dangerous? It's like, yes.
Yeah. Well, right. The problem is that we're always saying this or it, right?
It's
a singular thing. And I drew this, I had this metaphor, which is, look, if you want to put a screw into the wall, you don't look in your toolbox and stare at your hammer and say, damn it, that hammer is useless for this job. You say, I'm going to grab the screwdriver. I'm going to grab the power drill. AI is a set of different tools, or AI is allowing for a set of different tools to emerge. And we have to know what they are and how to use them and basically have this, figure out what the archetypes of them are before we can figure out how, and that can help to inform how we and when we choose to use it.
Yeah, and they need to be guided.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's the interesting part about AI that I've appreciated learning. And Sam, certainly welcome you jumping in on, you know, probably your work that you're doing now, but it's like, AI is in this thing that you just hit enter and it does its magic. Like it has to be programmed and it learns.
Right.
And quick side note, like I watched Terminator 2 this past weekend.
Oh, yeah.
Has aged well. So,
yeah.
And is also very scary when you look at current time. Anyways, but going back to AI, it's, I think the interesting question is how to harness this tool. And then also, what resources do public agencies, state DOTs, need, even from a personnel perspective, to be hiring to try and think about these issues or talk about them? Do you have any thoughts kind of on this question?
Like, there was a quote somewhere, and I was trying to look it up, that is like, show me the incentive and I'll show you the outcome, right? Yes. And I think the same is true for AI, right? Like, if you have an incentive to create safer streets without any other incentive, then you can have an outcome based on the tool that you are driving using AI as a tool. But I think unless we understand it to be that way, as a tool to be used by humans and controlled by humans, with an outcome that is clear, then I think that we'll all live in this nebulous place that the Internet of Things and smart cities has lived in for so long. I think once you're use case driven and you like really you are driving towards a specific thing, like with us in mobility data, it's definitely also getting into this nebulous place, right? Because everything touches mobility and all of that data matters, whether it's economic spend data versus travel data, all of it sort of fits together and imperfectly. And so being able to use incredible machine learning technology to get that information quickly is, in some ways, it does feel like magic, right? Like it feels like magic, but there's a lot of intention and tooling behind it.
And I would say the quicker that we can get these conversations from what does AI mean for transportation? Because we'll talk about that stuff for like 3 years and do or say nothing.
Yeah.
Whereas what are use cases for helping smaller agencies utilize things like ChatGPT to put together plans and what are ways that you can take a specific tool and utilize it to a known project and to your point to be human operated, then it becomes a matter of like how, you know, much like the internet, it didn't like replace all of the jobs within a city administration where it's like, I was a researcher. It goes, no, but that researcher can do unbelievable things and access unbelievable. And so like, it almost becomes this kind of exoskeleton, superhuman ability to do more, which I think what we've seen in the last 10 years really is public agencies are just kind of like being bombarded with change and with no tools to actually keep up with it. And so
it's
like
overload.
That's where like I think the sooner that you can get these conversations into how can utilizing X and not just, you know, AI, but like these different tools.
Platform.
Yeah. Exactly. But like these tools for doing this. And not what does it mean to state DOTs, because it's going to mean a million different things. Like, the flip side of it is, what is this going to mean to the public engagement process? When you have the ability to just completely spam, you know, it becomes robocalls, but like on steroids. And how do we maintain the integrity of a process meant to actually get the public's input?
Right.
And so that like there's like and like having conversations on that and not AI, like the sooner we get out of that,
absolutely,
the better.
Yeah. It's a distraction.
It is. It's, and it's okay if we don't know what it means yet, but like, doesn't mean we have to have 30 panels on it.
Right.
Yeah. No, I love that. And that's
not a knock on TRB this year. We are in that initial, like, oh shit, this is coming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then
I mean, it's every conference.
But it's like the sooner that we can get into the, like, things are out there. What are good use cases for this and what are potential negative outcomes? Mm-hmm. That I think is because that's what we're actually going to start facing.
Yeah.
So I think that'll be important.
So we have AI week every year.
Every week.
AI week.
You know? It's AI week. I completely agree. And that's why I can just close that quick. So my thoughts on this part, at least, is I suggested sort of bucketing solutions into putting solutions into four buckets and characterizing them. And one is sort of the rational, logic-driven, data-driven decision-making. That's one bucket, and that's to level up what we've been doing to the computers and analytics for a long time. Second is massive innovations. That's the things that are going to catch fire and change a lot about transportation, but will take longer and are more long-term bets. This is autonomous vehicles. This is drones, et cetera. Getting more practical solutions. These are the things about managing the built environment better.
E-bikes,
exactly. And, you know, sustainability. And then the fourth bucket is the human-centered approaches. And that's where AI is going to need the most help, is to achieve better human outcomes. That's where we're needed. And so I think that we need to understand we need to be able to characterize each of these tools and understand them in order to have more grounded conversations about AI. What else are you guys watching?
I mean, this is less important for TRB. Maybe it is. I mean, this is a community of people who care a whole lot about transportation. But I'm curious to see, like, the kind of cultural transformation that occurs post-IIJA, post-implementation, like, new age of AI awareness, I should say, because I do think that I was talking with you guys earlier about this, that I feel like this is definitely like a big bang moment for transportation, where things are hitting the ground faster than they ever have, whether it's like the actual built environment or whatever, you know, cool scooters are hitting the streets any given day. And I feel like people are starting to interact with it in a way that is sort of shifting people's mindset about what it means to, you know, have a quality of life in a city, or how it impacts affordability, or how it impacts access and equity. And so I think the more people have awareness and education around these kind of scary topics around AI, or, you know, why some things just are not working around congestion, and why nobody's taking the metro, and why things are unaffordable. Like, I'm curious to see how curious people actually get about this, because they'll start to see these things on the ground.
Yeah. And to that point, we can't be taking our attention away from the fact that we have a housing crisis in most of America. We have a homelessness crisis in so many American cities. And we have all these other challenges that we must solve. And they all fit together, whether it's housing, whether it's transportation, and whether it's climate change and equity. So we have a work cut out for us.
And I want to make one point, because I don't know if we really tied it together enough, but the ability to go big in IIJA and IRA, and the kind of nuanced thought on a lot of these. I mean, I think we saw this on the like industrial policy element of IRA and on these tax credits. This was and the broader national decarbonization blueprint document that was going on, this was all based on years and years and years of amazing research work that then was taken into a, okay, let's put it into action. So I think to the conversation we were having a little earlier about the need to get in, like, let's not miss the point that, like, that's actually what this kind of is. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, that this is, we've learned from past programs on EV incentives that you can't just give it to everybody. It doesn't help, right? And so we've capped it for high income, and also used it to make sure that we are doing, you know, it's based on the work of thousands and thousands of academic and research like teams that then was turned into action and policy beyond, you know. And so it wasn't just a cash for clunkers. It was like, no, here's all, like, we're tying all of these different elements, that it's not just consumer incentives. We also need the production side. And so we've got loans, we've got, you know, production tax credits on batteries. That's how we're going to build it. And like, that's all based on not just like, this is like, let's be honest, this is not Congress was like, we've got these ideas. Like, this was a lot informed, and the administration in particular had a very heavy emphasis from informed policymaking. And so I think that is definitely one thing. And so now I would say, what's next? What is 15 years from now that we want to start now, as opposed to trying to catch up with what's 2024? Because that's where I think the academic community is actually most valuable, is doing the hard long-term thinking that then sets it up for when we have that big bang moment, that it is like, this is the time, here's the thing, this is what we need.
Yeah.
As opposed to the timelines will just never, if they're trying to catch up, it's never going to keep up.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's the power of TRB annual meeting, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we've been coming here for years and years and years. And when I was federal advocate and I was bringing ideas to the Hill, I would hear things here. And that those were the things I was taking to the Hill afterwards and sharing research and sharing those things we needed to advance electric vehicles and multimodal mobility. And so there's obviously there's such a massive benefit of the agglomeration of knowledge and people here. And that's why I think this is such a really special conference. I'm happy to be here.
I am too. Especially with you.
Yeah.
And you. Me too. And you.
It's getting weird.
We're tipping our hats for those of you who can't see.
Well,
we haven't even started drinking yet.
So we're about to head out to Replica and the Mobility Podcast's reception, TRB After Hours reception. We will be interviewing Congressman Earl Blumenauer.
Very excited about that.
Really, really excited for that. Be interviewing him there and asking him about his tenure in Congress. And I'm sure that he'll bring some bike pins for all of us, too.
Can't wait.
It was going to be really awesome. But for those of you who are tuning in, thank you, as always, for listening. You can keep up with us, of course, on LinkedIn and Twitter, et cetera, Mobility Podcast.
It'll be me. It'll be Pete doing the bye.
Bye. Bye.
All right. Well, thanks, as always, for tuning in to the Mobility Podcast. And we will talk to you all soon.
Bye. Bye.